couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Half Brothers, All My Life, Black Bear, Dear Santa, and Godmother. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Sonic the Hedgehog. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@thatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. If you want to find me on the internet, I'm at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is a sad piece of news. We lost somebody in the Star Wars family this week, and that was David Prowse. He died at age 85 last Saturday. He is best known in cinema for playing the body of Darth Vader. And of course, James Earl Jones did the voice, but that imposing built person in the giant breath mask, that was David Prowse. He also had some other acting here and there. He was in Clockwork Orange. He was also in a couple Hammer films playing a creature. I mean, he was a big, tall, imposing guy, and so he tended to get roles like that. He was also famous for training Christopher Reeve and building his body so he could play Superman back when they made the first Superman movie back in 1978. So yes, David Prowse, you will be missed, especially in the Star Wars family. The next piece of news is a big one, and this just dropped on Thursday of this week. It's news that Warner Brothers is adjusting its theatrical schedule. And a lot of people have been looking at what the studios are going to do, because there really haven't been any blockbusters that have come out in theaters, and some of them have pivoted directly to on-demand in some form. For example, Mulan going to Disney Plus, but having an extra money that needs to be paid for it, or like Trolls 2 and the Scooby-Doo movie this summer, those pivoted to on-demand and made pretty good money from that, or something like the Bill and Ted's movie that went in theaters and on-demand at the same time and made 10 times as much on-demand than it did in theaters. Warner Brothers has been struggling with this ever since they were trying to figure out what to do with Tenet last summer, because that was supposed to come out in July and it kept getting postponed. And then they said, this is going to be the return to cinemas. We're going to release it on Labor Day weekend. And it barely made $10 million that opening week. And while it made some money in the theaters, it didn't make the $200+ million they were wanting in theaters. And it was kind of a bust. So they have been shuffling around their own releases and finally decided to put Wonder Woman 1984 on the slate for Christmas Day, opening in theaters, and also premiering on HBO Max, which is essentially Warner Brothers' streaming service. The Time Warner owns HBO, and it's all Warner Media. Well, it came out this week that Warner Brothers has said, you know what? Screw it. We are going to release all of our blockbuster films from 2021 that same way. So there's 17 of them on the slate. Every single movie that's coming out as a major release in 2021 is going to go in theaters and day and date premiere on HBO Max. And that's a huge deal, because it does not have any sort of exclusivity for theaters. Now, there is a certain exclusivity in the sense that if you're not paying the, what, $15-$16 a month that HBO Max charges, and look for that number to go up a little bit if this seems to work out for them. You know, it might be 20 some bucks, in a couple months to get an HBO Max account. But right now it's like $15 a month, $15-$16 a month. If that's successful, then that means you don't have to go to theaters at all to see any of these Warner Brothers movies. We're talking stuff like Matrix 4 and Dune, which was supposed to come out this year, or something like the Tom and Jerry movie we talked about in the trailer park a couple weeks ago, or Godzilla versus Kong. I mean, all these movies that would be huge blockbuster theatrical releases are going to be going to theaters. So if you want to see them in theaters, you can. And they're talking about doing it for the whole year. And this has frustrated a lot of theater owners. And the AMC has actually pushed back on this, because that's going to be a blow to their business, because they're not going to have the blockbusters. And the multiplex model is built on blockbusters. The multiplex model of having dozens of screens in a movie house is propelled by having the big movies that are going to be making hundreds of millions of dollars and then the small piddly ones that are going to be on the wings. The reason I think that this has sort of been a bit of a surprise is, you know, we got coronavirus vaccines coming, but even though they're coming, you know, it's been said that it's probably going to take until June to get as many people inoculated as you need. So you're still talking 6 months here that Warner Brothers is going to be operating with, not knowing what they're going to release, and they don't want to flop again like they did with Tenet. I would not be surprised if Disney follows suits on this, because Disney has already telegraphed this. Disney has said that they're looking at directly distributing content to viewers, which means taking the cinemas out of the picture, because then they don't have to pay the rights to it. They just release the movie and it goes directly to consumers and they get all the money at one time. They're tailoring their releases and restructuring so it all's funneling through Disney Plus. And already right now you got something like Godmothered, which is in the slate for this week. Even though that's always been considered a Disney Plus movie, you know, 10 years ago that would have just come out in theaters. And if Disney goes this way and bypasses theaters in a similar fashion, then that's really two studios at one, because then it's got all the Fox releases that they're going to be managing as well. People are saying, is this the end of theaters? I don't know if it's the end. It's not going to be the end of theaters. There'll always be movie theaters. I think this might be the end of multiplexes. And I don't know if that's a terrible thing, but you might end up with something that, you know, back in the day in the 80s when you'd have two or four screen cinemas, and those were reserved for the big budget event movies. There's only a handful of releases every year that just scream you have to go to the theater. And as much as I know people say, oh, the theatrical experience is wonderful and great, the theatrical experience is great when it works, but when you got people texting and talking and eating and walking over you and moving around and causing problems and kicking your seat, I'd just rather watch the movie at home. And I think that there's a lot of people in America who feel that way. And this is driving it that way. That's what happens when you put theater level technology in your home. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to talk about is not really a movie. It's actually a special on television. It is the Doctor Who holiday special and will be airing on BBC America on January 1st.
How many people in the universe get to meet the Doctor, let alone travel with her? Being with the Doctor, you don't get to choose when it stops, whether you leave her or she leaves you.
The Doc would really want us to keep an eye on the planet, right?
But how's that possible?
If you don't help, the human race is going down.
You with us?
As of now, you will see new defense drones at work.
Prepare for maximum extermination.
Not you guys.
I am a huge fan of Doctor Who. I've been watching it ever since I was a kid. I like Jodie Whittaker as the new Doctor Who. And we've got Jack Harkness returning. And he's an immortal character that showed up. I think he started way back in the David Tennant era. It looks like they're bringing back a lot of the familiar faces, like is it Jack Harkness and, of course, the Daleks. So I'm looking forward to this. I like watching the Doctor Who specials. I'm just, a little disappointed we got to wait all the way until the new year to actually see it, whereas usually they release this kind of thing on Christmas. The next movie I want to hit really quickly is Boss Baby, The Family Business, and that opens in theaters on March 26th.
Uncle Ted, I missed you so much.
That's my girl.
Woohoo!
You can't solve everything with money.
But you can, Tim.
You haven't changed at all. You're still a big baby.
Excuse me. I hate to interrupt. I mean, it was a riveting conversation.
She can talk.
A lot.
I'm in the family business. And now you work for me, boomers.
So, what's the crisis?
An evil genius is teaching kids to be very bad, bad babies.
No! Welcome to the baby revolution.
This is obviously the sequel to The Boss Baby, which I always thought was kind of funny. I enjoyed that one. And what's nice about The Boss Baby is it's not an adaptation of a fairy tale or anything like that. It's this weird, out-of-the-box, bizarre story. And this looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. It looks like it's stupid and has all the basal humor. You're going to have fart jokes and poop jokes and diaper jokes and everything, but I'm okay with that. I like that kind of stuff. So yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to this sequel to The Boss Baby. It might be kind of fun. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Dear Santa and Black Bear. Bum-ba-ba-doo, 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 bum-ba-ba-doo. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about a Christmas movie. It's Christmas season, so it's nice to throw a couple Christmas movies in here. But let's talk about something that's a little more heartwarming, and that is Dear Santa. This documentary looks at the work of the United States Post Office and volunteers who help Santa deliver Christmas wishes to children around the country.
I invite you to read the letters and see what touches your heart.
The Christmas season is a little rough. I'm struggling, trying to make a way.
We had to move because the fire burned our house.
This 11-year-old kid asked for nothing for himself. Talked about how loving and awesome his single mother was, and she did the best that she could.
The kid is only asking for love. How can you not grab this letter?
When people write these letters, they're sending out into the world, message in a bottle type deal.
I just feel like it's my duty to bring joy.
You know, the post office has been in the news a lot lately, especially because of the election and the allegations of them trying to slow things down. And there was the absentee voting. And then there's controversy surrounding that and the postmaster general. And there's name calling and contentious politics going back and forth. And this is a movie that's about the post office. And you know what? It leaves all that behind. You know, you do got to realize that there are still just human beings running the post office. There are people who are just working there doing their job. And one of their jobs is to deliver Santa's letters every year. You know, how many millions of kids write letters to Santa and they go through the post office and they've got to organize those and send them up to the North Pole? And this movie takes a look at that process and what is done with some of the letters. Because, you know, I mean, millions and millions of kids, and Santa can do a lot, but it's nice to take a little bit of burden off his shoulders. So one of the things the post office has done is they've created an organization within them to consolidate some of these letters, and people can come in and adopt these letters and take a little bit of burden off of Santa's shoulders and deliver the presents and really sort of spark that true meaning of Christmas of people saying, hey, let's take some of these letters, these kids who are in need, or just a kid who was writing a genuine letter to Santa and to tell him what the kid wants for Christmas. And people can look at the letters and choose which ones they want to adopt. And then they are in charge of getting the gifts. And it's a really sweet thing. It's the kind of movie we need right now. Here's something where people are doing actual good in the world. And people are trying to capture that true meaning of Christmas, which is the gift of giving and, you know, peace on earth, goodwill to men, all that good stuff. And that's what is the purpose of this documentary. And this is something you can watch with your kids. It's really adorable because they have all these interviews with kids about Santa Claus and why they write letters to Santa Claus and what they think happens to the letters and the kids. And it's like any sort of those, you know, those stories where they ask the kids things and the kids say some really funny, crazy things. And some of the requests they have in the letters, they've shown some of them, like, you know, kids want very, you know, normal stuff. I want a Star Wars toy. I want a doll. I want a truck. What, did somebody ask for a bear? Like a real bear? I don't know if Santa's going to deliver a real bear. But I mean, you see those kind of funny things in the letters. And it's not just about getting the kids the present. It's the people who volunteer and work to fulfill these dreams and their stories and why they're doing it as well. And it's a really tender, sweet, touching Christmas movie that's worth seeing. You can watch it with the family, and it's exactly what Christmas should be, and it's exactly what the world needs right now. So I encourage everybody, go out and see Dear Santa. Find it. It's on demand and in some theaters. It's worth watching this holiday season. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another movie this week, and that is Black Bear. A filmmaker visits a couple as they get ready to make a movie, inciting feelings of jealousy and inadequacy.
You used to be an actress, and now you're a director. Why'd you give it up?
I didn't.
So, do you guys have a plan for this place?
I don't really know what we're doing.
We were living in Brooklyn, and it was getting so expensive, and we weren't really working, so...
I figured if I never learned how to cook, then I would never become a housewife.
You're really hard to read.
Yeah, you know what? I get that all the time.
This stars Aubrey Plaza as sort of that main character, the main filmmaker. and it's centered around her. And then she visits this couple, and the woman's pregnant, and the guy's her. Well, he's, I don't think they're married. They're just boyfriend and girlfriend. And I think she's preparing a location where they're going to use their house for where she lives. And she used to be an actress, but now she's a director. But while she's there that night, they talk and they drink and they get to know each other, they're starting to dredge up some feelings, that the couple's fighting and there's unresolved issues with them. And there's clearly an attraction between the guy and Aubrey Plaza's character. So it becomes contentious and mean at times, and they argue and they fight. And then the shifts tone at one point, and it kind of becomes a different movie. It's not as David Lynchian as stuff like what happened in, like, you know, Lost Highway or something like that, but it shifts the tone, and the same characters are in different roles and they're making a movie. And the first one was, maybe, I don't really know how the two connect, because there's supposed to be a connection there, but there's enough broken ties that you can't make that immediate connection. And so it's interesting in the sense that there's symbolism there, and there's stuff to decode in the movie, and there's stuff to unpack. And look, you know, Aubrey Plaza gives her a good chance to do something a little more dramatic. And she's known for comedy. And she's done drama before. She's done dramatic roles or non-comedic roles. I mean, and she's done sort of trash stuff too, because she was in the Child's Play remake. She played the mom in that. But it's nice to see her do something dramatic and not just overt comedy, and apply her deadpan delivery to that. So I think she's good in it. The problem with the movie, and look, here's the thing. I used to do independent filmmaking back and around the turn of the century. And it's a tough gig. It is a labor of love, and there's a lot of problems, and you're trying to herd cats through an entire production. The problem I had with this movie is it ends up being a movie about filmmakers. Even from the beginning, they're like, oh, you're a filmmaker, you're a director now, and not an actress. And nothing is more boring to somebody who doesn't make movies than movies about people who make movies. Now, you can get something like Mank, you know, that movie about Herman Mankiewicz that's actually dropping on Netflix this week. We talked about it last week because it was in limited theaters. But that one's interesting because it's these sort of larger-than-life characters. And you've seen, like, when they did the movie about Hitchcock and how he made, you know, it was a look at more or less a biopic. But nothing is more boring to the average person than independent filmmakers making an independent film about independent filmmakers. It's like a book being written about a writer. Think bigger, people. Think outside of your own box. And the second this went to this sort of filmmaking story, I was like, oh, geez. Because I can recognize all the problems, and I recognize all the personalities that you have on a set, and I recognize where there's fights and differences and that, and I've experienced all that. But you're so involved in this movie that you don't understand that people outside of the movies don't care. And to me, this just became a self-pleasuring effort in the last half of the movie. They're so egocentric that they couldn't break out of their own life as filmmakers. So that's when it lost me. And then no matter the number of good performances or, you know, interesting writing, is all squandered. So I'm going to have to say, in that sense, Black Bear kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Half Brothers and All My Life. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with Half Brothers. An airline executive in Mexico travels to America to see his dying father, only to find himself on a road trip with a brother he never knew he had.
Bueno.
Renato, your father's very ill. He really needs to see you.
Listen, not to be rude, but I don't even see him as my father anymore. He never came back.
I'm not going to the U.S. 5 days before our wedding.
This man's the source of all your issues. You have to go.
I just want
to
know what happened.
And you will.
Is this guy bothering you, Dad?
Dad?
Meet your brother, Asher.
What?
My sons, you deserve to know the truth about why I never came back. So I put a whole trip together for you both.
We've seen movies like this many times before. It is not uncommon to have a movie where you have a sibling you never knew you had, and you have to deal with them and get to know them. And it follows a very standard formula because, I mean, think about it in your life. If you had an estranged parent and you met a sibling you didn't know you had as an adult, there would be a lot of mixed feelings there. There would be resentment. There'd be suspicion. There'd probably be like a little bit of excitement. Depending on who you are, there might be a little bit of excitement of, oh, I have a, I mean, I don't have a brother. I have a sister, but I don't have any brothers. So if I found out that I actually had a brother that I didn't know, that would be kind of cool, but also a little bit nerve wracking. So we've seen this before, even something like Step Brothers with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. It's a very different approach, and there's sort of these two adults crammed together and having to be siblings at a certain point. That's the same kind of thing. You had the people have to learn to be siblings in a neat little 90-minute movie and tied with a bow at the end. And this movie follows that. I mean, that's essentially the story. The different angle they're coming from is it has it take place partly in Mexico. The opening of the movie takes place in Mexico, and it's about this kid who grew up in Mexico, and his father ends up moving to America to find better work, and the kid grows up to be do well for himself as an executive, and then has to go to America. So like a good for 15 minutes or so takes place in Mexico, and it stars some people who I don't know, because I don't speak Spanish. I don't watch Spanish language shows or anything like that. But the actors in it are well known in Spanish language cinema. And we've seen that happen as well, where for the Spanish language audience in America, of which is there's a huge amount of people in America that watch Spanish language programming, Eugenio Derbez's entire career is based on that. He did that movie, what was it, The Instructions Not Included, and he did the Overboard remake. He's a huge star in Spanish language television, but native English speakers in America, the average white guy in America doesn't know who he is, but he's huge in that market, and I think that's who this is going for. That's who the main character, his actor is Luis Geraldo Mendez. Apparently, he's got a pretty big career outside of English language cinema. And that's kind of what this movie, I think, is sort of trying to cross-pollinate. But because it is essentially, it's an American movie. It's directed by Luke Greenfield, and he's done plenty of other stuff. He's done comedies, but his movies have been all American. You know, he did like Let's Be Cops, and he did Something Borrowed. He did The Girl Next Door. He did The Animal. So he's done a whole bunch of stuff that's just regular Hollywood movies. So it is sort of trying to do this cross-pollination with the Spanish language market. And I mean, it works. It's a cute little film. Connor Del Rio plays the other brother, and he's kind of that glue that makes it work because Mendez, he kind of approaches it with a lot of a hard edge, and it's almost demeaning to just these big, stupid fat Americans I'm dealing with, you know? And it gets a little insulting at the beginning, but you know, hey, the American film market has done plenty to insult the Mexican community, but it doesn't really take off because his characters, he's that jerk character that has to learn something by the end. And so it takes a while to sort of shrug off all of his trappings. And you end up with the two of them, Mendez and Del Rio are partnered together driving across country, and it's the two differences that make that work. You know, they're mixed chemistry, and they're very opposite behaviors and they're opposite personalities. And in a way, the audience itself is like another half brother stuck along for the ride, because at the beginning you may not like this. I was kind of irritated. Like first half of the movie, I was like, meh. These characters are annoying me. They're kind of mean. I'm not into it. And as I got through it, as they kept going, you learn to tolerate them just as you would on this road trip. And then it kind of get a little bit endearing by the end. And you're like, oh, okay, there's a sweetness here. There's something to be said. It's kind of a cute movie. And it works. I mean, it's not a great movie, but it's a nice little distraction. And especially, like I said, I've been asked, you know, are there anybody that anyone would recognize? I'm like, well, I don't recognize any of them, but like I said, you know, in the Spanish language market, these are some pretty big names, I guess. Anyways, it's a cute little movie. It's fine for what it is. I didn't hate it, and, you know, it did what it was supposed to do, so I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie, which is All My Life, After meeting and falling in love, a young couple must adjust their wedding plans due to some tragic news.
I've never wanted anything more than for you to be my wife. I promise that I'll love you for the rest of my
life. This is all I want on my wedding day.
So?
They found cancer, and it spread. We don't have much time left. Maybe we skip all of it.
The wedding?
Just feels like a lot right now.
This is going to be the happiest day of our lives.
What's funny about this movie is like the marketing of it, the way it's shot and the posters and the trailers and how those are all put together. It almost feels like a romantic comedy. It's not a romantic comedy. It's a romantic drama. There's some cute stuff and sort of like that first cute meet and the relationship as they get to know each other that does kind of feel sort of light and airy and be a level of the romantic comedy section. But it's not a comedy. It's a drama. It's a tearjerker. And it stars Jessica Roth and Harry Shroom Jr. Jessica Roth, you would notice her from, she was in Happy Death Day, Happy Death Day to You. And she's also in Valley Girl. She was in that this summer. She's got a bit of a career that's churning for her. Never a huge breakout star, but she's got a lot of movies under her belt. Harry Shum Jr. is from Glee. He was the other Asian. And that's sort of how what they referred to him. And they do a fine job. They're good acting in it. I mean, it works, but it's basically a, you know, kind of like a retelling of Love Story. If you remember that movie with Ryan O'Neal and, back in the 70s and Ally McGraw, you know, there's a subgenre of romance movies that involve some sort of disease. Everything from A Fault in Your Stars to Me Before You, and there's like a subgenre to this. I don't understand the subgenre, but it exists where somebody's sick and they either they're going to die or that's what propels their thing. It was that 5 feet apart. That was that Haley Lou Richardson movie, and then there was that one about the girl who was couldn't leave the house because she had an immunodeficiency, and so these disease romances tend to do well. I mean, like I said, the actors are good in it. They're certainly sweet and they got chemistry, and you know, especially that first half of it where you're kind of going through the rom-com section of it. It's very sweet and adorable. The problem is once you know what the movie's about, you're just kind of waiting for things to play out. There's no big surprises in this movie. I mean, it was funny. I read the blurb of it and it didn't mention disease or anything. It just said tragic event. And I'm like, well, one of them's probably going to get sick. I mean, it's based on a true story. And then that's the thing. Anything that is really based on a true story may not have this great sense of uniqueness because things happen and the true stories tend to be a little more mundane. And, you know, there's nothing against the real couple that went through this because, you know, that sounds like it's a tough ride. But as a movie, I mean, it's Hearts in the Right Place. But like I said, once you know what it is, there's nothing more to it. You just kind of are waiting for it to go through the motions. And if you love those sort of tearjerkers, you're going to love this. Bring the Kleenex. But, you know, for me, since I'm a cynical SOB, I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Godmothered and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Sonic the Hedgehog. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The final movie we're going to be talking about today is not in theaters, and that is Godmothered. A fairy godmother in training goes rogue to help out a woman who is struggling with juggling family and faith.
I'm looking for a sad little girl named Mackenzie Walsh.
That is me.
No, it can't be you. You're old. Have you seen yourself?
Security.
Me again? I'm your fairy godmother.
Back off, lady.
Morning. Oh, good. You're awake, too. Is this your true love?
Not anymore. Life isn't always a fairy tale.
Fine. After all, 9 out of 10 fairy tales begin with once upon a time something amazing happened while she was drinking wine in her sweatpants.
This is an offering on Disney Plus. And originally I was wondering if it was something that was going to go to theaters and then got pivoted to Disney Plus because of the pandemic. But no, this was always considered something for Disney Plus. And before I even talk about the movie as a piece of entertainment, I got to address something that I noticed when the Secret Society of Secondborn Royals came out a couple months ago. The Disney Plus movies, the stuff that they are making for that service, is different than the Disney Channel original movies they made for decades on the Disney Channel. And this, to me, says Disney Plus is not just a digital online version of the Disney Channel. They have the Disney Channel stuff, and they have all those Disney Channel original movies. But those Disney Channel original movies were very narrowly focused to that tween audience. It was that High School Musical audience that you had for about 3 or 4 years, and then you lost them. And that's an important demographic that I thought that they were just going to retain in Disney Plus. But with their Disney Plus original movies, they're made with a higher production budget, it appears, a little bit more of a mainstream approach to the filmmaking rather than sort of the tween rom-com goofy kids being groomed for a Disney Channel show like the Cheetah Girls for That's So Raven or grooming Demi Lovato to do other movies and then putting her in stuff like Camp Rock or whatever, or the Jonas Brothers, all the kids that churn through the Disney Channel is not necessarily what Disney Plus is doing. Disney Plus, I think they're trying to do legitimate theatrical releases in their on-demand service. And in Godmothered, it follows grown-ups. And I think that's the first thing I noticed is it's not a story about tweens. And that's the big difference. And that was something that wasn't in that Secret Society for Secondborn Royals, because that was for teenagers and it starred teenagers. This one's about regular adults. Ilda Fisher plays the mom in this one that is being targeted to being helped. And she's in her 40s. I mean, she looks great for her 40s. And she sort of embodies this Bernadette Peters sort of energy around her. And she's great. I wish she had gotten more. I think she had taken time off to raise a family, you know, after her sort of making the splash and stuff like Wedding Crashers. But she shows that she certainly has that flair, because she had done that one with the Shopaholic movie, and that was through Disney. Jillian Bell plays the godmother in training, and she's a real interesting choice, because normally she is a raunchy comedian. You see her showing up in movies all the time in a side character that is usually something that is very blue or very dark. And in this movie, Jillian Bell kind of has, it's sort of like the movie Enchanted, where Amy Adams is the Disney princess that shows up in New York. That kind of has a very similar connective tissue to this movie. You know, there's a lot of that fish out of water comedy. It's not nearly as charming as Enchanted, but it uses the same kind of humor. And Jillian Bell's adorable in it. She's great. I mean, you take away all the raunchiness and cynicism, and she still can deliver something that's really kind of funny. And she holds the movie together, and her chemistry with Ilda Fisher is pretty good as well. The daughters of Ilda Fisher, they're okay, and they have a couple moments, but it's really the two of their movie. And it works. I think it's a sweet little movie. It's at a level of a mid-level theatrical release. It's not like an Avengers movie, but it's something that you would have seen come out in theaters in March or something like that, or February. And it's just releasing on the Disney Plus service. And I think this should also make the theater owners sort of quake in their boots, because I think this is where Disney wants to take things. Anyways, I gotta say, it's a cute movie. It's worth checking out. It's kind of that fun for the whole family type movie. Godmothered kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's home cinema release is one kind of from the vaults, a little bit from the vaults, and that is Sonic the Hedgehog. This was a movie I did not get to see at the beginning of the year. It was one of those movies, I think it wasn't screened, or it had a conflicting screening, so I wasn't able to see it prior to its release. And by the time it came out, I could have gone and seen it in the theaters, but then the pandemic hit and we closed theaters. And then it finally went to on demand and video. And I got a chance to check it out this week, finally. And I've been wanting to see it because I was very curious about this movie. So, you know, being able to watch it on demand was kind of nice, watching it at home. And so this is the one I'm doing a spotlight on, because I kind of want to sound off on it. A fast-moving alien hedgehog lands on Earth and becomes the target of a dastardly robot scientist.
I'm Sonic, a little ball of super energy in an extremely handsome package. On my planet, people were always after my powers. So I came to yours.
Why are you hiding out in my garage?
They're coming for me! If they steal my power, they could conquer the universe. You have to help me.
No, I don't.
Please, it's life or death.
Whatever this creature is,
I'm going to uncover the source of its power.
Yeah, hey.
I finally watched this movie with my son, who's 12. And he had been very curious about this movie. He didn't get a chance to see it. Like, one of my other sons had gone and seen it on a date, like in February, before the pandemic hit. And he really liked it. And one of the things that made a lot of news about Sonic before it came out was the $5 million they took to redesign the Sonic character, because people saw the original design of it and threw up everywhere because they're like, oh my God, this thing looks horrible. It was weirdly in this uncanny valley between human and hedgehog, and it was unappealing. And they redesigned Sonic to make him look a little more like the game. And that was a good choice. And I'm glad the movie did well, because I want Hollywood to be rewarded for making the right choice. And this was the right choice. The other thing that makes this movie work, though, is it's essentially a cartoon movie. It's a story about this lost character who needs to go find a MacGuffin, and he teams up with this local sheriff to do so. And really, that's the story. They're being chased by, I guess Jim Carrey's like a robot villain, something genius. I don't know. I never quite understood what his character was. But I guess he's from the game, obviously. And Jim Carrey is very funny in it. I mean, it's his very standard, over-the-top, crazy Jim Carrey character that he plays. I mean, we've seen this, everything going back to when he was in, you know, The Mask and Dumb and Dumber and Ace Ventura, and then even as the Riddler in Batman Forever. So he's fine in it, but James Marsden does a great grounding role. He plays the straight man. He's the Bud Abbott to Sonic's Lou Costello. And James Marsden, I think, is an actor who's had a big, long career. He's been in a ton of stuff, but I never think he gets the credit he deserves. He's a great actor. He can be very funny. He can be dramatic. So he's great in this movie because he grounds himself against a blue animated hedgehog, and it works. The hedgehog is Sonic is voiced by Ben Schwartz, best known as Jean-Ralphio Saperstein from Parks and Recreation. And he's funny in the role. I mean, I played Sonic the Hedgehog like once. It was in the 90s. A friend of mine lent me his gaming system, and I played it, and I just about had a seizure, and I said, that's enough for me. So I'm not a big fan of it. I don't know the backstory, but what I think worked with this is it gave itself the backstory and then wrote its own story. One of the problems with some of these old video games movies is they would try to tell the backstory, and the backstory is just set up. The backstory isn't a dramatic arc, and that's where you ran into problems, or they overinterpreted it, and that's how you got something monstrous like the Mario Brothers movie that they made back in the 90s. But this one's fun. I enjoyed it. I thought it was cute, and it's funny because my son then wanted to watch Detective Pikachu again, because that's another one that was a very successful animated video game or gaming movie. So I'm going to have to say I enjoyed Sonic the Hedgehog. I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's a kid's movie, so I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray, there's a lot of stuff, including the new film, The Rental, plus the first time Popeye has ever been on Blu-ray, and then a whole bunch of 4K and special editions, including the Lord of the Rings trilogy, Blade, Leon the Professional, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and then this selection of Eddie Murphy films in 4K and special edition, including Coming to America, Beverly Hills Cop, The Golden Child, and Trading Places. Oh, and if you didn't get enough cocaine in your life, DC Cab is also available. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Wolfwalkers, Wander Darkly, and Nomadland. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.